Welcome to Fired Up Conservative Talk. In a political landscape often filled with fireworks and drama, the recent vice presidential debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz felt more like a polite tea party than a high-stakes showdown. Picture two candidates sitting across from each other at a coffee shop, sipping lattes and discussing the weather. If only the weather were as exciting as this debate. Let's start with Tim Walz. He came prepared, looking sharp and sounding serious. But if you were hoping for him to channel his inner buffoon, you were sorely disappointed. Instead of pulling out a rubber chicken or delivering a zinger worthy of late night TV, he opted for a let's keep it civil approach. Maybe he thought he was auditioning for a role in a feel-good family movie instead of vying for the second highest office in the land. Then there was J.D. Vance, who seemed to take the gentleman part of gentleman's debate to heart. Instead of going in for the kill, like a lion on the Serengeti, he played it safe, more like a house cat napping in the sun. His critiques of Vice President Kamala Harris and Tim Walz were about as sharp as a butter knife. You half expected him to follow up with his points with, but hey, no hard feelings. The end result? A debate that could have doubled as background noise while you folded laundry. Viewers were left wondering if they had stumbled into a political seminar instead of an electrifying clash of ideas. It was like watching paint dry, if the paint were also trying to be diplomatic. In conclusion, while both candidates showed up ready to play nice, they forgot that we tune in for the drama. Instead of memorable moments that would make us laugh or gasp, we got a debate that felt more like a friendly chat over coffee, minus the caffeine kick. So if you missed it, don't worry. You may not have missed much, but we'll discuss. Hello, everybody. Once again, this is Fired Up, your source for conservative talk. And let's get right into it. First of all, we have our regulars, Ms. Annette Ross and Mr. G. Mangani. But we also have a special guest tonight, Jamie Miller. And before I get Jamie to tell us a bit about himself, my intro, that's just how I took it. Listening to our previous podcast with Big John, I did rethink my message. But, hey, I had already written it out in such a short time. I had to go with it. So, welcome our guest here, Mr. Jamie Miller. Jamie, let's get into it. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Hey, I am a longtime political consultant and reputation management, strategic policy, public relations professional. So, I've worked on political campaigns and mostly in Florida for the last 30 years, everything from a rural bond for a hospital emergency room to being a senior advisor on Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign here in Florida. I'm a veteran of the 2000 recount in Florida. I was director of field operations, and I'm a former executive director of the Republican Party of Florida. So, close elections are my expertise.
We got a big wig. I love people like you with your experience. I remember.
I just had to laugh at the 2000 recount thing because that was a big cluster. The whole country was waiting on what you guys were doing over there. So I'm glad it pulled it in the right direction.
That's how they were looking at those chads. I remember that. And you know what, Jamie? I tell people, I go, you want to look at the first modern day steal. We're not going to go to JFK and what Daddy did in Chicago. Look at the 2000 election in Florida. Jamie, your quick thoughts on that and compared to today, because I tell people, hey, Al Gore, Cherry picked the counties. I mean, they knew they were going for the steal with the Florida Supreme Court. That was obviously very liberal. I'm biased as a conservative, but even as a younger man there, I was like, this does not seem right. What, looking back at it, what are your thoughts in comparison to that?
In 2000, we had several. It was really interesting because in Broward County, which is the most Democrat county in the state, it ended up being the final year of the one last Republican countywide elected official, Jane Carroll, who is supervisor of elections.
Oh,
we were actually able to pull off, not that we want to spend too much time on this, but We pulled off a major bluff there where we filed poll watchers in every precinct in the county using kind of a little cloak and dagger, if you will, in our Florida election law, which everybody learned way too much about. But as you know, every county in Florida and almost every county in America kind of has their own fiefdom of supervisor elections on how they count, how they report, the machines they use. A lot of times with state direction, but sometimes it's at the sole discretion of that county supervisor.
I just never forget Rita Cosby coming down the steps of the Supreme Court. And at first, it sounded like, oh, my God, Gorwin, the way she was saying it. And then it came out, and I thought it was the right decision. Okay, people, we'll start off with Mr. G. Mangani. My take is I was upset, frustrated, but then after I thought about it, I was like, okay, they went in with the strategy Vance did. In my opinion, let's not screw this up. And he purposely played nice, didn't want to make waves. I, as somebody who served in a political junkie, was kind of upset he didn't take Walz by the throat and just twist that foot on him. G, what was your take?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. So I'll go through my notes here because I think a lot of it talks to what you were saying. And again, I don't know when the conservatives will learn. Don't go to ABC. Don't go to CBS. It was another 3-on-1 debate. Now, these moderators weren't as bad as the previous moderators at ABC, but again, they were doing fact-checking, and it was oh so subtle in some moments and not so subtle in other moments. Also, the questions they asked, it was biased. I mean, really, we couldn't ask any questions about the port strike, but we had to ask questions about J6, which was asked a month ago. So, again, JD even had to call him out. The rules were that you weren't going to fact check, and then he actually ended up fact checking him. I love that moment. It was risky because it could have gone off the rails a little bit, but I think it was masterfully done. But their goal coming in, I think, was to, they both had to prove that they were good VP picks. And the reason why they had to prove that is because they needed to prove that their boss were good judgments, had good judge of character, right? That they could choose the right people for the job, right? So JD's goal is to change the perception that the Democrats had put on him about being a bad wife beater and a creep and, you know, calling single ladies cat ladies and all that. And I think JD Vance held his own, was poised, he was knowledgeable, he was articulate in ways that I mean, we just know that's not Trump's strength, right? Trump's strength is leadership and leading through just the presence of his character. But J.D. Vance had the intellectual articulation, which I think was good. And to your point, he could have been the attack bulldog. I mean, usually vice president candidates are, but I think he erred on the side of trying to be likable, because I think his goal was to make, especially the women in this country, but especially the ones that are in the middle, go, okay, I can't stomach Trump, and I hate Kamala, but I can go for JD. And in 4 years, we're going to have to come up with, you know, whoever we're going for at that moment. So,
no, I agree.
Yeah. So then I think his thing was he proved Trump's choice of himself was strong. And then Tim's goal coming in is he had to prove that he had the testosterone to go from like the little stage to the big federal stage, right? And for some reason, he perfected the look of sheer terror. I mean, he just had this deer in the headlights look for like an hour and 40 minutes. So it was amazing. Now, I'm being facetious because at some point he did get a little more comfortable, but I think he failed at his task. I think just from hearing in pundits, I think Kamala's in there going, oh my gosh, who did I pick? You know, he looked nervous and fidgety. He looked like he didn't want to be there. And, you know, we've seen the videos of him. He acts awkward, like Homer Simpson, is what I've said last week. And he just kind of, I don't know, maybe rehabilitated that a little more. But on substance, he had word salads. He had a lot of attacks on Trump, but very little articulation of Kamala's policies that Kamala herself can't explain. So he did a little better job of explaining that she couldn't. And so I watched CNN, Dana Bass, Jake Tapper felt like he was overprepared and he just couldn't hit back. So I think it just goes to show Kamala's judgment was weak. So my overall take, I think the needle, these debates don't move the needle. But this one might because it's the last debate. So I think it will move the needle a little bit towards Trump.
Look at that. That haircut got you fired up, huh, G? I tell you this. This shows real quick how we look at it differently. I thought the bar was set so low for Walt going in. We were all expecting a 2 or 3. I thought he did a 7 or an 8 in contrast to what it could have been. Miss Annette, what are your thoughts?
Well, I love that G said deer in headlights. And I don't know. I know you said it was sort of like sleepy time, but what is wrong with being polite? I actually, no, I'm sorry, but I appreciate a civil discourse. I do, guys, because you have to sometimes at least show, I think, to the American people that you're trying maybe to find a little bit of common ground. It doesn't have to be a bloodbath. It doesn't. And I thought they handled some moments where they were trying to be congenial with one another. And I guess call me crazy. I don't know, but I thought it was nice. I appreciated it. I actually think that J.D. Vance did a very good job. He, in my opinion, I felt bad, honestly, for Tim Walz at times. He looked uncomfortable. When they did the side shots of him, he looked stressed out. He was looking down feverishly, like, at his notes sometimes. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that poor man right now, what is he thinking? And J.D. was very smooth and articulate in his responses. He could give one point after the other point after the other point and not even pause, which was, I thought, extremely he was very smooth and very polished. And I thought he did a great job. And I thought that Tim Walz had a few good moments. But on the whole, I thought he was weak.
Okay. Jamie, if you haven't figured it out, Miss Annette is our keeps us sane person. You know, here's my favorite picture, Tim Walz, who I assume that's his daughter. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Jamie, your thoughts. I don't know. We've never had a guest of your stature, and I say that in complimentary because you've got the experience. Do you look at things from a professional
perspective? I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. So,
well, you're welcome. But do you look at this from a professional perspective and a personal? I'm just curious. I mean, give us your thoughts, but I'm just curious of what.
I can tackle it either way. I think probably more passionate is from the personal side, but. I felt like J.D. Vance didn't win this debate. I thought he commanded it. I mean, there were no fewer than 3 occasions where he said, I'm sure Governor Walz would agree. And Governor Walz was already like, yes, before Vance even finished the sentence. And so it was just kind of like, well, he could fill in the blank with anything and still would have won the moment. And I thought Walz had 2 very, very bad moments when he was talking about both China and then being friends with school shooters, which was both were just bizarre comments that I think will get a lot of airplay. J.D. Vance had the one prepared comment that I thought he delivered well, which was the whack-a-mole, you know, comment that, you know, well, I know you're going to have to whack them all because inflation and the economy is so much better under Trump. And somehow you have to come here and defend the atrocious economy of Kamala Harris. I won't say that's a quote, but I think I got fairly close. And so I felt like overall, now the question is, does it move the needle? And J.D. Vance, Governor Walz also had a couple of, I felt like were, from a professional standpoint, it probably made his staff wince. At one point, he said something like, you know, these aren't super liberal or new green deal people, and almost talking down to the left of his party. He also said one time I thought he demeaned blue collar workers, where he said something along the lines of, teachers, nurses, truck drivers, whatever. And I just thought those were, from a professional standpoint, those 2 moments I thought were horrible in the fact that, you know, if you're a teacher, a nurse, or a truck driver, and then he's dismissive about your profession, how you put food on the table, and how you send your kids to college, I felt that was those were moments that probably showed the true character of Governor Walz and how he does not really speak for all Americans.
I agree. I guess, you know, what I have just discovered listening to you all is I'm always taking the notes so fiercely. I'm hearing this. I'm like, gosh, I don't remember because, you know, I'm so focused on the notes that I don't hear the little nuances and things like that. And in fact, right before it started, I had a little family emergency. So all I wrote is this. Thoughts on the opening questions. Let's start with you, G. Iran versus Israel. What are your thoughts on that portion of the debate? Then we'll go to Jamie, then we'll go to Annette.
Yeah, I mean, that was Walz's first question, right? I mean, he was super nervous in that with his answer. I mean, and I get it. I've been there. Your adrenaline's really going. And for the first few moments, I was sitting there going, okay, trying to remember his memorized line at the same time of dealing with the heart pumping, right? So I kind of felt bad for him, but look, you'd run to be VP, not student body council president, right? So this is a big stage. So if you got to take some nerve calming drugs or whatever to do that, you need to do it. And so he didn't answer the question. So the answer was, do you support Israel if they do preemptive strike? And what did he do? He spent, what if it was, I believe it was 2 minutes, and he just attacked Trump the whole time. Trump this, Trump that, Trump this. And I believe there was a quote on CNN pre-debate, maybe it was yesterday or today, that where he said, look, this is not like being a teacher where you have to answer the students' questions. It's a lot different. So I think JD saw that quote, and you notice JD's first answer or the first sentence to that question when it's handed to him was, I'm going to answer your question, but let me go into this autobiography. For some reason, they just totally overlooked the autobiography, like, hey, why don't you introduce yourself to the American people or whatnot? Because these are two obscure politicians, right? So Vance said, I'm going to answer the question, I think, three times. And I think that just highlighted in that he's not doing the Kamala Harris, like, repeat the same thing three times thing. I think he purposely did that to say, I'm answering the question, and this is the answer. We're going to support Israel. That's their decision. But he's also highlighting the fact that Tim Walz did not answer that question.
Gotcha. Okay, I can see that. Señorita Annette, what do you think?
Wait, you went out of order.
I'm sorry, Jamie. I apologize, Jamie. Force a habit there. And Jamie, if you disagree or you have some pushback, that's okay. Tell us if you saw it differently as well.
Oh, I've got no problem sharing my opinion. So, you know, I agree, but I also think that it was much worse than that. That those first 15 minutes for Walz were really bad. I mean, they were bad. They were bad from optics. He looked like the Chris Farley meme of, you know, the guy who's selling vans or living in vans down by the river, right? And all sweaty and just, he mixed up, I want to make sure I get this right. He mixed up, I think it was, Israel and Iran. He just completely kind of, when he was answering his question, he kind of said, is Iran, like, it's like, and you, it left the viewer thinking, like, which one did he mean, right? He also mixed up Gaza and Hamas, you know, and you think somebody who is, you know, coming out of the gate and prepared for a debate of this stature and wants to be a heartbeat away from being president of the United States, those aren't mistakes you like to see happen, certainly from a staff standpoint, or I think from an American, you know, citizen standpoint, you don't want to see those things happen. I agree. In fact, my wife, who's not political at all and kind of is my sounding board on these, she just, you know, she's, you know, playing her game on her iPhone and just kind of says, yeah, they really can't say much other than they're against Trump. And that was her takeaway of that first question. And I think that probably is about a fair analysis as anyone.
Right. Miss Annette there, what were your thoughts on the Israel?
I agree with both of the guys. You guys are going to make it easy for me tonight. He was bumbling. And I guess the only thing I could add to what they said was, did he instill faith in the American people? that being that heartbeat away from the presidency, he could be giving strong, sound advice and we could be comfortable with him in that role. You know what I mean? Should something happen, that he could like be commanding and know what he was doing. Like, he did not instill faith in me. And I felt that it was, to your point, Jamie, at times a little bit confusing. Confused by him at that early, in those early stages, I thought that was his weakest. I didn't think he strengthened during the debate a little bit.
They both said it. Analysts kept saying that, well, you know, they're having to defend, and as they badmouth the actual presidential candidates. But I think the Democrat Party in and of itself is in a tough spot. They don't want to lose the Muslim vote, and yet they want to keep the support of the Jewish vote. So that was a tough one. And then him flubbing it and leaving confusion, you're right, it was not a strong moment. Did anything stick out outside of the fumbling there from the Iran-Israel that maybe Vance should have or should not have done in your perspective, G, before we move on to the next topic, clean energy?
No, I think he talked a lot about when Trump was there, there was deterrence, right? And that's what kept the peace through strength. And I think JB presenting that, and this is the contrast, right, that Jamie was also talking about, is that when you look at Tim Walz and he's jittery about this thing, and you're like, oh my gosh, how is he going to handle Iran and Israel if he becomes president? Meanwhile, you contrast with JD, who was calm and in control and answering the question, and saying deterrence and peace to strength. It was almost Reagan-esque. And I'm sitting there going, 2028, this is my next Reagan in my mind, right? So I think that was an important moment, just because this started at what, 9 p.m.? I mean, maybe people watched the first half hour and then.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Jamie, agree with G there or disagree?
I do, and I think that Walz's strongest moment came at the very end. This debate was supposed to end at 10:30. I think it went to about 10:50 Eastern. Certainly, if you're kind of interested, you probably, and you saw an hour and a half, you're probably, you know, and you wanted to put in an hour and a half, you stopped at 10:30 and. You know, his biggest haymakers kind of came at the end where he came off the ropes about January 6th. And, you know, but that, I don't put that on J.D. Vance as much as that was always going to be a play in the Democrat playbook this time, regardless of whoever was standing on the stage. I thought J.D. Vance handled it very well and, or as well as he could have. And, you know, I felt like, you know, it was hard for me to follow what Walz was saying. What I write on Substack at Reasonable Arguments. I've already kind of posted my first thoughts, and it was just, to me, I started to say that it was, you know, J.D. Vance's facts versus slogans, because I felt like certainly through the first half of the debate, Walz really didn't, he kind of had his game plan. Now, to his credit, when J.D. Vance kind of softened his image, Walz was able to pivot. And I think that's when everybody kind of saw Walz get a little stronger was, you know, after a couple of those commercial breaks, he's like, okay, the guy's not coming out to punch me right in the nose. And so, you know, he threw an olive branch. I'm going to accept the olive branch and see where it goes. And he got stronger after he had that confidence that Vance wasn't just going to come and punch him right in the nose. And so in that regard, it helped Walz a little bit, but I think it was still the best move for Vance. Like, I think that Vance had to show, I like to say when everybody expects you to zigzag. And I thought that's kind of what Vance did. Everybody thought Vance was going to come out and really there was going to be this, you know, Mike Tyson 90 seconds where Vance just threw and tried to get the knockout punch. And instead he's like, no, this is who I am. I grew up in this humble household and I understand the plight of women who have unwanted pregnancies. And, you know, he certainly answered the abortion question better than I've ever heard a man answer it in our party ever. And,
We're going to get to that, Jamie.
Okay. Sorry for getting ahead.
That's a big, I really want to, get Annette's take on it. Annette, let's move. I'm looking at the time here. It's 25 minutes in. I don't want to keep you off too late.
Let's keep going. Bedtime.
Clean energy. What was your take on the clean energy take? And real quick, to Jamie's point and G's point, slogans is all they really have. And if we had a fair media, that wouldn't be the case. But the media allows it, and the media actually pushes it. Example, the J6. Most of America is past that. They realize, oh, it's not what you guys made out to be. But they want to keep these tropes alive. Because when it comes to policies, the Democrats are struggling. So, Annette, having said that, what's your take on the clean energy in terms of Vance and Walt's take?
Well, can I just really say something before I forget to what Jamie was saying really quickly?
Sure.
Or is it going to get just really...
No, go on.
It might just get a smidge in the head, but I thought J.D. Vance did a brilliant job pivoting and talking about how important it was that we had free speech.
Like, hey, yeah, we're going to get to that.
Okay, democracy, when you were talking about January 6th, he was like, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to talk about the bigger threat to democracy. Okay, clean energy.
I apologize. I don't mean to sound mean, but it's like we're going all over the place here.
Okay, no. I just love getting into the organic conversation. You like your format. You like to be organized. I don't have my dog here as my little comfort animal right now, so I'm going out and so wait, okay, William, you're saying you think that on this issue, Walz was surprisingly good. Why did you say that?
Well, believe it or not, the first two topics, I haven't said much because I was a family emergency, so I'm relying on you guys to help me out there. I just put on my notes that, again, I wanted I don't know why, but I wanted Vance to just come out and just pummel him like Mike Tyson did the boxers early in his career. And I thought this was an easy knockout. And they both came out like gentlemen. So early on, I was like, damn it, Vance, you're weak. So I put Vance weak. Well, I was surprisingly good. So my take is more from the perspective I expected Vance to just come in and start destroying him. But they were two gentlemen. So that was my take there. I'll be honest, I had a bit of a family emergency there on the Iran versus Israel and the clean energy. I'm listening to it, but not able to take notes. I get hot and heavy once we hit immigration.
I do. I'm going to get there. So you go to the guys for the clean energy.
All right. Jamie, on the clean energy, that's a big Democrat topic. I viewed it when they brought it up early. It was to help Vance gain his footing, to help give him confidence. What was your take on that segment there?
Yeah, I actually wrote in my notes that Walz answered climate change very well, and I thought that Vance did. I thought that Walz also dodged the question at that moment, and Vance, as G said, returned to the question. He, at that point, I wrote in my notes, Vance gets his talking points in and then answers the question. Mm-hmm. So he did a very good job of putting Walz on notice that you're going to have to answer the question, and that's really, I hate to say it, but that's kind of what I took away from the climate change is that Walz did an admirable job on all the lefty stuff, right? And so, if it was a lefty question, he pretty much did okay with it. When he didn't do okay is when Vance pushed him, he would come out and be like, oh, well, and he would stammer his way. I wrote in one point that he said, look a lot. He would just use the word look. Hey, look. Hey, I said this, but look, and he was using it as kind of a crutch of either he didn't believe what he was saying or he didn't believe the audience was buying it. And so, so when I see things like that, it was funny. And at the very end in January 6th was the only time I caught J.D. Vance using the word look. And so it was kind of, and I would say the same thing to him about him in that January 6th question was that, he either felt like, he used that word look when he wasn't comfortable. And Walz did that throughout the debate.
Gotcha. G, before we get to you, so because I obviously saw it completely different, let's say he came in, we expected it. It sounds like you guys thought he performed extremely poorly. Walz, on a scale, just real quick, G, before you answer the clean energy, Annette, on a scale of 1 to 10, where did you rate Walz?
4.
Jamie?
It would depend on what you categorize his goal for the evening. You know, I think
not to get pummeled and not to hurt Kamala.
Yeah, he did probably a 7.5.
Ooh, gee. And then answer the question. Answer the question.
I think 3. I mean, everyone was talking about how he was a homegrown Midwestern man, and I just didn't think he came across like a man. Now, in this answer, I think he did better, because as I said in a couple shows ago, when Kamala, when Tim are talking core issues that they really believe in, they become confident, articulate, and it's when they fake being centrist, that's when they start fumbling, right? And then they have to resort to talking points because they don't want to say what's really on their heart. This is always tricky for conservatives. JD did something that was a brilliant jujitsu move. He said, if you really believe in clean water and clean air, like Trump and I do, then you bring the jobs from China where they do all of that with dirty plants and bring them back home, right? And now he made it an economic jobs issue. I thought that was a brilliant jujitsu move.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, that was good. And I'll clarify that I gave him a 7 dependent upon I don't think anybody who is voting for Harris left Harris because of Walz's performance tonight.
Right.
Right, right. I don't think either one moved the needle. All right. So let's move on to immigration. I thought Vance did make a good point with when he talked wages. And one of my issues is when Democrats get in the corner, they're like, well, your meal prices are cheaper. Because I do understand. You get those and I also hate it when Americans go, well, Americans won't take that job. I'm like, yeah, if I had a teenage son, I'd say, get your ass out in that strawberry field here in Valley Center and learn some responsibility and accountability. But their fallback is they won't take those jobs. And I thought Vance made a good point in terms of how illegal wages paying illegals drops that wage. So I thought that was a good answer. And he stuck to the deport them with the criminal. You know, hey, let's start with the criminals first. And we're at a point in this country where I believe everybody's, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Because that's all you're seeing in the news. And I don't care if it gives or doesn't give illegals a bad name. That's what's happening. A lot of people would be alive if these illegals weren't here. So I'm looking at it from a factual standpoint. Jamie, let's start with you. What do you think of those two top points from Vance?
You know, I thought Vance did a great job talking about the 320,000 unaccompanied children that Kamala Harris has lost. I mean, how do you lose 300,000, 320,000 unaccompanied children? I mean, that's the population of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That's the population of North Las Vegas, Nevada. I mean, we're not talking about small cities here. And that if we put all those children in one city, it would be the same population as Pittsburgh. It's incredible to me that this isn't a bigger issue in this campaign, because she clearly was identified as our government's representative to, okay, even if they're saying, you know, we're going to let as many illegals come across the border as possible, wouldn't she at least take some responsibility for children and making sure the children who are coming over unaccompanied are safe? And so not only has she not taken responsibility, she said that Department of Homeland Security, it doesn't even exist. I mean, that's the talking point that's out there, is that, you know, oh, this isn't true. I was like, well, the Department of Homeland, your own Department of Homeland Security has this in a memo. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not, it didn't come from my blog, you know, like I've rewritten it, but I certainly didn't make it up. Right. And so I thought J.D. Vance did a good job of putting an exclamation point on that very important issue. You know, I quite frankly, I felt like he could have gone a little further with it. But I think his goal was to, and this was still in the first 30 minutes of the debate. And so I thought, you know, he was going to be calm, cool, and collected. And I thought that he handled the question very well.
That's a great example of what I was talking about, pummeling him there. And thank you. I had 320, and I was writing so fast I couldn't read my notes. I'm like, so you're right. That's an even better point in terms. I guess what I'm trying to say is I liked how he started out, how he handled the whole immigration. But I also think because of all the crime, the gangs, the news, everything has shifted in terms of how they were talking and looking at immigration pre-2020 to how they're looking at it now. It's kind of like you get what you vote for. And I used to tell people, wait and see what's coming, you know, back in 2018, 2019. What about your take? And let me add another caveat, you know, the way G's our economic guy there, Jamie. So G on the wages and the 320 kids. But what about his take on the Trump stalling the bill that Senator Lankford? And after G talks, before we go to Annette, Jamie, I'd like your take. Is Senator Lankford an actual conservative? I can't quite remember. But G, let's get your take first.
No, I think that there was a one missed moment for JD in this, and I think he did extremely well. I think Kamala and Tim think that this is an effective attack, and to some degree it is, because Trump did kill that bill because he got Mitch McConnell on TV saying it, or he didn't kill it, but he had a hand in it, right? But what JD should have done, he said Kamala spent 3 years undoing Trump's 94 executive actions. What he should have turned and said, all you're doing is waiting for Congress to pass some bill when you could have just put some executive actions like Trump did, right? Like, just go and act, be a leader, right? I think that was a missed moment. He should have done that. And I think that was near the middle of it. So there was still a back and forth because I wrote moderator. She actually did say more than 50% support mass deportation. What do you think about that, Tim? So there was another back and forth where he could have said that. But I loved his answer. I've been to the border more times than Kamala Harris has been.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was good.
And so cost of things go up because you have more people coming in and spending more money, and that's going to bring wages down because you have more people willing to do the same job for less. So absolutely, there's a big economic cost to that.
So, Jamie, I ask you that because you've got the expertise in this. I can't remember if Lankford's a rhino, conservative, moderate, or what, but my issue with that bill was it represented – the Chamber of Commerce, that's more of a fantasy now. It's not true. The Chamber of Commerce represents big business. They're okay with, I think, illegals coming over for the cheap labor, whether it's in the restaurant industry, whether it's working in the fields. And so when I saw that bill, that's what I saw as a constituent, as a Latino who's come from Panama, who's lived his life being a political junkie after seeing two dictators. And but I, to be honest, when he said it, I was like, oh, it was Senator Lankford and obviously Mitch McConnell. But am I looking at it wrongly? I'm asking for education here, or is my analysis of thought process right?
I don't think so. I think it's kind of, I think Democrats are tilting at windmills a little bit when they're like, oh, Trump as a non-elected official. And when all this was going on, I don't even think he had fully secured the Republican nomination. Although I think at that point it was kind of a high likelihood that Trump was going to be the nominee. And they're tilting at windmills trying to say, oh, this is Trump's fault. And the truth of the matter is this bill was, you know, this immigration bill was dead in the House, you know, long before any of this. So this was never going to see the light of day. Byron Donalds is one of my congressmen. He lives about 45 miles south, 100 miles south of me in Naples, Florida. And he constantly is railing on this, you know, and it's, if you follow him on Twitter, he is constantly telling people why this bill was dead on arrival in the House. And it had nothing to do with Donald Trump. It had to do with, oh, we're only going to have 5,000 crossings per day.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, that's still 1.5 million per year or whatever that number is. And so so it was all a sleight of hand over in the Senate, and they were trying to get something done so they could kind of claim a victory, but it was never going to be a real victory because it was always going to be used against whoever voted for that bill. And so, but I will say during the debate, this was one of the times that Walz got caught in one of his big lies, right? I mean, he had a couple, but This was one of his big ones where he said border crossings were down under the Harris administration. I mean, I was just like, nobody's going to fact check that. Like, you know, we all know. I mean, unless they've redefined border crossings, right? I mean, that's the only logical explanation for them to come up for him to come up with that border crossings are down. So that was one of his big lies during the debate. So,
Real quick, Jamie, I apologize ahead. I'm digressing here slightly. I'm curious. Back to this bill that they said Trump killed. Why would the Republicans bring up a bill? I mean, what was the whole – why on earth would you bring up a bill that's so bad? We know it's not going to go anywhere because you're absolutely correct, where the optics are going to look bad for Republicans from the get-go. That's one thing I did not understand. Why did you guys even bring this bill up in terms of the Republicans?
I've never worked on the inside of Capitol Hill. I have worked on campaigns for incumbents who are on Capitol Hill. And what I've learned – running those campaigns, like I said, it's a whole different level of sausage making when you're in, you know, on the Hill. But even just being like a campaign manager for a congressman or somebody running for the U.S. Senate who is a sitting member of Congress or a U.S. senator, the biggest strife in those campaigns always comes between the campaign staff and the actual Hill staff within the campaign. And it always surprises me. It's like, oh, we should all be getting along. We all have the same boss. We should all be, you know, working, you know, many hands make light lifting, pick a cliche, right? And, right. And it always is just the opposite. And part of it is, I think you have staff members who, the tail wags the dog a little bit more than with some members of Congress. The policy experts say, oh, well, you know, behind the scenes, if we give a little here, we can get a little there on this other farm bill or this, you know, other thing. And so there's a lot of moving parts. And so how a bill this bad gets to the point where it gets a vote in the U.S. Senate is quite frankly beyond me, but it's not surprising to me.
Right. And then before we give you a big shout out to Byron Donalds, I am Panamanian. Byron Donalds is half Panamanian. There's only a few million of us in existence. And one reason I'm in this fight is because I have a lot of relatives that look like Byron Donalds. So when I saw the tribalism here, I was like, my grandmother, you got heard of it, it was called the N-word. So then when I heard Byron Donalds say that, he's Panamanian, man, my ears perked up. Woo, there's more of us out there, you know? So shout out to him. Walsh just kept dancing around over and over and on the immigration. And then he just lied, you know, saying how it's down. I mean, what were your thoughts at this point on immigration, but in general, too, on Walsh just dancing around everything?
Well, one of my thoughts, if I remember correctly, wasn't one of the very first things that David Muir said in the presidential debate that there were more border crossings than there had ever been? Right, it was one of the first points that he brought up in that debate. So what surprised me was that was the lie, because I thought to myself, how would he counter that? That was said by an ABC correspondent. That how is Kamala going to address that or talk about that issue? And then he lied about how about the border safety. I mean, I just thought it was. I hate lies anyway. I mean, I know Paul. No, I know.
But no, you are right. We all hate him. But I'm like, that's politics, baby.
No, I know. You always say that. But we're trying to do better. And, okay, so I thought what Jamie said was very compelling. I thought one of the most compelling moments of the night about immigration was about the children. So, to me, the Democrats, like, historically come out as a party that seems like they have, you know, more of a heart for people. You know, right. Like, not like the cold corporate, you know, just the idea of what Republicans at least used to stand for. The Democrats always were like, we're feeding the poor, we're taking care of people, and they're not taking care of children. So that was like, that's a blow, I think. I thought that was like one of the more compelling moments. However, I'm going to say something that might be unpopular. I don't know, but you guys then can counter me, so it makes it more fun. I guess sometimes I think with the immigration, it's not the reason for everything. I thought it was weak, and maybe you guys will be able to, you know, slap this down or whatever. when he brought up immigration as part of the reason for people getting access to all these illegal guns, I'm pretty sure he made that point, you guys, correct? Didn't J.D. Vance say that? I mean, is that to me, that was not an immigration issue, I guess. Am I wrong? I could be wrong. You guys could tell me.
Gee, what do you think?
No, that was in the later topic. I wrote my notes, legal guns coming across the border.
Yeah.
And absolutely. But, yeah.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Now, so Annette, see, actually, I believe economically illegals, G is actually the better e-com person here. Jamie probably better than this than I am in explaining that. But to me, illegal aliens affect everything from, especially the strain on the services, whether it's welfare, I mean, look at California.
On top of that, the
housing industry, you know, and my biggest issue with the immigration right now is, they're not assimilating. They're coming in such huge blocks. They're setting up their own little mini wherever country they're from. So they're not going to assimilate. They're not going to learn English, which is a detriment to them because English is the number one business language. That in turn slows down teaching at schools because kids who speak English are being held back by the non-English. And for a Democrat to challenge me, they're going to lose. I was actually a teacher's aide. I saw that firsthand. So I do view it economically. But let's keep moving here on. Let's get to the, because it was the immigration. And my favorite topic, Springfield, Ohio. Jamie, that's just so funny. I laugh at it. I don't take that seriously at all. I mean, and I'm a pet lover. If I was there, I'd probably take it more seriously. But the whole thing, but this is one of those small nuances to kind of create a subconscious belief or look at Senator Vance, the Haitians are there legally. And then JD did not help himself when he said you weren't going to fact check. It made it look like they were fact checking a lie there at that moment. But what he was angry at is the fact that they were telling a half truth. There's a reason they're legal because Kamala or the Biden regime used, I don't want to say loopholes, but they worked their way and finagled it to make them illegal, to fast track them for whatever. But what were your thoughts? Let's go with you first, Jamie, here on that whole part of it where he challenged him. I thought that it didn't matter what anybody thought previously in terms of how well Walz was doing. I thought CBS actually hurt Walz because that's going to be a big talking point tomorrow. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the times that moderators do what I call a hit and run, right? They wait until the 2 minutes have run out for each candidate. They have a short editorial and then they move on to the next topic, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the things I had, in my notes and, and the moderators did that several times, always in Walz's favor, you know, to the, degree that they were. And so like I said, I don't think the moderators were the story like they were in the very first debate, but they still, I think you still saw the media agenda setting that is capable from people in power in the media. Just how they choose the questions, where they decide to ask them in the debate, you know, certainly the January 6th question coming at the end, they wanted that to be kind of one of the lasting moments. So, you know, it's disingenuous. It's not, you know, the amount of time that was spent on abortion was probably the longest topic of the night. And so I just how that 2 minutes turned into 16 or however many it was, I'm guessing I haven't looked at the time, but it was just it seemed like an extremely long time that they were talking about abortion and they just let them go back and forth, you know, because that was one of the topics that I felt like Trump didn't do well on. And Trump, even on that topic in the last debate with Harris, people tried to move on and Trump went back to it. And it's like, listen, let's move off the topic. And so it felt like the moderators were trying to instigate that moment again with Vance. And then Vance, didn't, and I know I'm skipping around a little bit, but, we were back on, or was that?
No, you're right. I agree with you on the abortion. But I guess assessing with a final comment here on that moderator moment, did it help or hurt Vance there, him challenging him? And I'm not defending CBS, but they were smart in this sense. When they cut the mic off, they cut it off on both of them so they wouldn't look biased. What's your final comments on that? And then we'll move to G.
They did. I thought that moment worked out. You know, I wrote in my notes, moderators, ? And circled it because it was like, oh, is this going to become part of the story? And it didn't. And so I think the moderators would argue that, you know, hey, us cutting off their mics and cutting them off both at the same time and doing it in a fair way, if that it was a fair way, at least that may have changed the debate into the more cordial thing we saw in the last 2/3 of the debate. Or, you know, so I think they will defend themselves that they did the right thing. They probably did the right thing. I would have probably given Vance, it seemed like he was coming in for a landing within the next 10 seconds. I probably would have given him that 10 seconds rather than kind of making this big point that we're the moderators that hear us roar, you know, but,
right.
I don't think it hurt Vance because I think Vance mm-hmm. was correct on the facts. I don't know that it's something that Harris's team is going to really revisit a lot with the press, like in the spin room that's happening right now. And, since we're live right now, immediately following the debate, it's, you know, I don't know that that's an issue that they're going to really try to accentuate or shine a lot of light on because Vance is right on the facts.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think Vance won that. Everything that any positive that Wallace had gained at that moment, he lost because, you know, you're right. It's not going to be a big story. But people's perceptions from the first debate to this one, the moderators ruined it for the first one, then they hear this so early on. It does leave a lasting impression on the average Joe. Gee, your thoughts on that moment?
I think it was a slap on the wrist, right? It's like, okay, I'm on to you, and this is going to happen again. And I think Jamie's right that moderators said, okay, let's hold back on our personal comments. Because when they said those people in Springfield are not illegal, he's like, well, darn right, they're not illegal. Kamala put them there, right? And so I think that was also a win. So it was a double win. One is you wouldn't have this Candy Crowley moment with Mitt Romney later in the debate, right? Maybe that was headed off because he decided to challenge them in that moment. And two, he basically said, Kamala, one out of three people is Haitian in Springfield is because of Kamala. What other city are you seeing this in?
Right.
It's more Biden, right? But, you know, they're tied at the hip. So so I think it was a double win for Vance.
Miss Annette, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, William, going back one fast second, and then we'll go back to my thoughts. My thoughts are similar to Jamie and G, but I just want to quickly say I wasn't saying that illegal immigration isn't a problem economically. I was just bringing up the gun issue. So sorry. Oh, what is this cow about? What is this cow about here, William?
Oh, I'm just having a little fun, lighthearted.
Oh, okay, that
and
that.
There is no right or wrong. What's unique about your perspective is you bring the perspective that a lot of Americans are seeing. And sometimes we get too caught. I know Jamie does this for a living. I've been doing this my whole life. G's an econ. Yeah. So sometimes we get so far into the weeds. It's good to hear a fresh perspective from that we may not think of, because sometimes I'll pull my hair out. I'm like, how can you think that? How can you see that? But they're not living their lives politically. They're working, going home. They hear snippets. They'll hear this, watch this debate. So their right. perspective is a little different. So it's very important. But what did you think of,
to that point, William, though, so when sometimes when you're just at home listening and you're like immigration, problem for everything. It just sometimes starts to feel like, no, that's, you know what I'm saying? And if you talk to people outside of our party or outside of a conservative mindset, they don't hold that same truth. Do you know what I mean? They don't see that in the same way, for sure.
No, you're right. I don't deal with illegals. But I'm sure somebody in the construction industry, somebody in the restaurant industry, somebody working up here in the fields, you know, each each industry will probably have their own thoughts on how they view. I view it from a bigger picture, what I believe in this country, how I think this country is going. And I base all of mine off of my upbringing in Panama. So, and my point is, you have your own upbringing. G has his, Jamie has his. So we all do look at it differently. So let's go on here.
Well, before we go on, I just want to point out one thing. Like, it makes me smile and gives me hope that Annette says that she's hearing immigration too much, because as a professional, you know, we would sit on a calendar and say, okay, at this point in the campaign after the vice presidential debate, you're trying to tell a story. And so, of course, immigration's part of the story of this election cycle. And every time I hear Springfield, and I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect that the Trump campaign's going to start leading into very quickly after this debate that every American in every corner of America feels less safe than they did 4 years ago. And that's not because of what's happening overseas. In the past, it's been because things are happening overseas. Now they're happening here. So much so that this one little town in nowhere, Ohio, is now one third of one foreign group. It's not like, hey, we're having a melting pot. It's like G said, it's like they took one third of this town and plopped 20,000 Haitians in a town that was 40,000 people. And so they increased the population by 50%, all with one nationality. And so that's to change the entire dynamics of that town. And so I think what you'll see the campaign do is pivot maybe a little bit from it. They're always going to talk about immigration, but they'll start talking about how you feel and how you feel less safe. Your children feel less safe at school. And William, what you were talking about, like, hey, my children aren't getting the same education, you know, so that they were capable of because of the massive language differences that we now have in our K-12 public school system.
Right. That's and you know, living here in San Diego, we're not as close to it, but it's like every day in the news from LA, San Francisco, the crime and feeling unsafe. And to G's point with the services being, pushed to a breaking point in Springfield, I saw, after all this went down, I read or saw an article, or video talking about how there's one little industry that has completely displaced the Springfield residents because the Haitians came in and they undercut them all on the wages. You know, so there's, and I think they should pivot to something like that, but they've got to figure out a way to make those talking points into general layman understandable talking points. Okay, so we all know that Tim Walz's best moment was not Tiananmen Square. You know, I guess real quickly here, I don't want to delve too much time on this because we all agree on that. But, gee, could Walz have done anything to make it better? And the caveat being, JD came back with a great answer at times. Look, I say I'm wrong. I've said it tonight. You know, and he was alluding that too. Maybe you should have done that. So is there anything Tim Walz could have done better to handle that? Because that was like a Kamala worse out of that. I'm like, I think Kamala personally prepped him for that section.
Right. So she said, okay, well, when they ask you about Tiananmen Square, talk about how you rode bikes in a small town with your buddies and the green lawns, the hopes and aspirations, dreams. It was a bizarre answer. If he had just said what he said in the second segment of his answer, right? So he gave this long word salad, and then the moderator, to her credit, said, okay, but you didn't answer the question, right? And then his answer was, okay, well, yeah, I talk and then I just say things and it comes out the wrong way and I made a mistake. And then there's this awkward pause, right? And that awkward pause and him having to finally admit it would have been, well, he should have just admitted it in the beginning, right? That should have been, boom. Yeah, I got my dates mixed up. I said the wrong thing. I wasn't there, period. We all make mistakes. I'm sorry. Then, you know, that would have been the end of it. But no, it looked like he was trying to dodge the question, and she brought the question right back. And then he finally had to answer it sheepishly, and he didn't even directly answer it. Almost did. And then there was this weird pause, like, you know, when your mom and dad used to look at you when you said, yeah, I took the cookie out of the jar. And then they just kind of stare at you.
Right.
And it's like this weird, like, oh boy, I'm in trouble now, right? That was the moment. He should have just fessed up in the beginning.
I agree. Miss Annette, I kind of view it from this perspective. There are times in our lives we know where we were at, you know? And if you were at Tiananmen Square, I mean, when somebody says Tiananmen Square, and I'm sure you guys would probably agree, the first thing that comes into my head, the first image, is that Chinese dissident standing in front of the tank. So if you were there, you're saying you saw that. That's in essence what you're saying. So to me, I agree with you, Annette. I just think that, look, I just misspoke there. I sincerely apologize. Let's move on. I mean, that was the best idea you could have. What are your thoughts?
I thought that was a disaster. It was so uncomfortable, and I was like, again, I guess I'm constantly baffled by it, and I know I shouldn't be because you keep on saying it happens, William, but, like, he was just lying. It is so hard for me to see someone lying real time and to see him sort of, like, then try to work around and tell a different part of the story, like she was explaining. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, this is terrible. Well, first of all, just tell the truth. Like, what?
Annette, you're right. Now, the reason they lie is because in 2000, the media came out of the closet and they became pure leftists after Al Gore wasn't able to steal the election. That's my take on it. And if the media was honest, these politicians wouldn't be lying nowhere near as much. I mean, they'd be pulling stuff out like Clinton did. Well, it depends on what the meaning of is, you know? So now they just blatantly lie, you know? So, Jamie, your thought, anything Walsh could have done to have saved himself there?
Yeah, he could have not called himself an old man and a knucklehead. So, that's kind of was my takeaway, is that what – why are you calling yourself a name? Why are you calling yourself a name? Yeah. Like, it just, like, you're demeaning yourself. You're demeaning your own stature. You're demeaning yourself in front of the entire world. You know, you're running to be the second most powerful person in the world. And you're like, shucks. You know, like, I'm just a knucklehead sometimes. And,
I'm with you, Annette, on how you hate lying. I hate that. Because he's trying, I'm sorry, Jamie, but he's trying to be, shucks, you know.
Like self-deprecating?
Yes, self-deprecating. And I'm like, no,
That's maybe what he was going for, but at the same time, like G said earlier, we're not electing someone class president and trying to plan a homecoming dance, right? we want somebody who can sit across the table or at least support the person who's sitting across the table from the leaders of Russia, China, and North Korea. And, you know, that all shucks stuff is not going to work. I thought he embarrassed himself, and I thought he proved himself incapable of being commander in chief.
Yeah, it's not endearing. No.
I agree. I mean, it's like even Mayberry knew they were in trouble if Barney Fife assumed the mantles of sheriff. God, I'm dating. All y'all shaking your heads, so I know we're all dating ourselves. That one. Kids are like, who's Barney Fife? Okay, let's move on here. Just give me one statement on your thoughts when they tried to get Vance to talk badly about Trump. I think it failed. I think Trump handled that. He mentioned the tariffs. Give me just a couple sentences, G, then Jamie, then Annette, on what you thought, how JD handled that.
That's what Tim Walsh should have done. He said, look, I was wrong. I admit it. I changed my mind.
Simple.
And for the audience, me and Big John go back and forth. Big John's our producer, Jamie. You see him there silent at the bottom of the screen. But he always brings that up about J.D. Vance. I had TDS until February of the when I saw what Trump was starting to do with the regulations. I held my nose when I voted for him. I was like you, Annette. There's a way you campaign against your own party, and I was TDS. But I changed, and now I am a Trump champion, not because of Trump the man, but I look at the results. And as a Latino who looks at the whole minority landscape, whoa, we were rolling. We were surfing high when he was there. So people do change. Jamie, how do you think JD handled the Trump
question? I agree 100%. You know, it's I always like to say, you know, it seems like we're all in violent agreement, right? So instead of arguing with each other, we're in violent agreement. But, you know, I think that I agree that J.D. Vance did a great job of being true to his positions of his past while explaining why they have changed. And so I think that's what America wanted to hear from him, and I think that's what they heard.
And that I always preface it by saying, look, the reason I became a supporter of Trump is the actions and the results. You know, somebody, I'm a results oriented guy. Cause people will sit there and say, well, Kamala's changing. You know, she says she's going to do this. She's never shown an aptitude to actually have done it or to do it. So how do you think, JD handled the Trump question?
Annette. Preface it. That's what you're trying to say.
Thank you. I love to be a politician. I'll be another Tim Walz. Oh, shucks.
No, I love the straightforward approach. That's okay. That's defendable, right?
Yes, it is.
Because people grow and they learn and they change when they get new information.
Right. No, I agree. So you like the way he handled it. Yep. Okay, no, I get it. Okay, so let's start with you. To answer Jamie's question or point from before, he's right. I think part of the reason the debate lagged past its 90-minute point was because of the abortion issue. It's like the Republicans have historically shown themselves to be a peewee team, and the Democrats a major league team in how they handle this in the public. I'm not talking about their policies. It's how they talk about it. You know, how their beliefs come across. And let's start with you, because I thought you may have liked this. JD came out and said to me, what is the truth? What is the first step towards Republicans and redemption on the abortion issue? We got to do better. You know, we're trying, you know, that's how I kind of took that. What were your thoughts?
Oh, my gosh. I was excited, William, because he made so much ground here, in my opinion, because he was coming out of a bit of a hole with that because of the way things were cut up and the things that maybe he said and maybe had gotten misconstrued in the media. So now he was able to articulate a complete thought, and he was able to talk about it in a way that shows he can be measured about it and reasonable and not some sort of what's the word for it when you just are, you know, absolute. So I thought he did a terrific job. That was like a strength tonight. Of course they love to bring that up because they think that's the thing where they're going to keep all their women voters. I mean, that's especially the younger women, the fear of that, the fear of what policies might come if they have like a Trump Vance, you know, ticket. So they've done a good job enforcing that fear, and he did a really good job saying you don't need to be afraid of this at all.
Right. Now Jamie, I think they dragged this segment out because this is where they were hoping Walz would come in with the right hook, the uppercut, and then, you know, the kick. You know, what are your thoughts on how JD handled this?
JD, and I said earlier, you know, I thought he answered it as well as any man has answered it in our party in a very long time.
Yep.
And he humanized it with his own personal experiences, so much so that he said, hey, you know, one of my lifelong friends has had an abortion, and I know that, you know, she feels like her life wouldn't be the same and wouldn't be as good if she had had the child because she was in an abusive relationship. And then he looked right in the camera and said, I love you. And yes. So I think when you start looking at little tiny things like this, and this is maybe me being too much of a campaign professional, but I think a lot of people needed to hear that Republicans don't hate you because you had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we do understand that people have these life circumstances that make women have these incredible hard choices, personal choices. You know, and I've couched it throughout my career as I'm pro-life for very personal and emotional reasons. And people who are pro-choice, I know, are pro-choice for very personal and emotional reasons. And my personal and emotional reasons don't make me right and them wrong.
But their
personal and emotional reasons don't make them right and me wrong. It just makes us, we're going to vote different on the issue, and we have a different experience that has led us down a different path. And I think what J.D. Vance tonight did was, say, hey, I'm on a different path, but I respect the path that you're on. And, you know, especially when they looked in that camera and said to his friend, I love you. And I just thought that was probably just one of the most human moments of the night.
It was like the empathy.
He looked sincere. I mean, Annette, did you feel like he looked sincere in that moment?
Yes. It was emotional.
Yeah. That was a real strong moment for him. And for us to be saying that about a Republican candidate about an abortion question is something that I don't know that any of us had in our prepared notes coming into the debate tonight, and he was real about it. I just felt like he was a human about it, and I think throughout the debate he touched on it, but really with this question it kind of drove the point home, is that, you know, he kind of looked in the camera and said, a lot of your experiences out there feeding your kids, you know, maybe he hasn't had trouble feeding his kids, but he had trouble getting fed as a kid. Yes. And so I think he was able to talk about a lot of these experiences from a personal and emotional and connect with the American people in a way that if people were watching him for the first time, or even they've only seen him from memes or whatever, I think they saw a personal and emotional side of him that they just quite frankly weren't expecting.
Right. You know, I said I wanted him to come in and pummel him, but as the debate was going on, it started to hit me a little bit. And then hearing Big John talk with a Libertarian VP nominee, Mike Turmat, it made me realize, you know, he had to humanize himself. He had to make himself a little bit likable. So maybe that's why he held back on being the attack dog. Now, gee, your take on how he handled himself, but I want to add on a little bit here. Do you think he should have gone after Walt a bit, because Minnesota does have a law up to the ninth month. If I remember correctly, and to the audience, do not quote me, but there are, I want to say seven states, but there are states who have literally passed laws to up to the birth of that child, you can have an abortion. So do you think he handled himself well there? Do you think he should have pressed a little bit more at the end there? Because Walt was playing dumb, and JD came back very smartly and said, well, where am I wrong? Where, you know, and Waltz couldn't answer because he doesn't know the details of it. But JD challenged him, and I thought JD did great overall. I would have liked to have seen him a little harder on that point, but in just talking right now, I think maybe leaving the fact that Waltz couldn't answer the question, maybe that was best. What do you think?
No, debates are, you know, interesting moments to try to, you know, try to prove something, because Tim just flat out denied it. I wrote down he totally denied that JD said Minnesota allows for botched aborted babies to be left to be killed, right? And Tim said, no, that's not true. So what are you going to say? No, it is true? No, it's not true. Then you look like you're a bunch of, you know, 5-year-olds.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. He came in and said, well, he didn't say that. He threw it back in his court, I thought smartly, from a debate perspective. Well, tell me, where am I wrong? And he couldn't answer with a specific. That's what I'm referring to. So speak on that.
Yeah, I know. But a lot of the debate battle is after the debate, right? It's in the tweets. It's in the talking points. So enough was thrown out there where that happens, right? Like the Springfield, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, right? And then people go, well, what's going on now? But I just thought this whole segment, because I started to tune out. I was hungry. And I was following it, but I was also starting to tune it out a little bit. And I just thought, look, the Democrats keep trying to pin this national thing, right?
Yeah.
The National Federal Pregnancy Monitoring Agency, that you're going to have a national abortion ban. We want a national pro-choice, you know, abortion law. And Trump and JD have made it clear, no, this is a state decision. The Supreme Court has ruled that each state can make their decision. And whatever that ends up being, that's what it ends up being. And so, we're just going to go around in circles again, and Democrats are going to say, no, 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 we want national this and you want national that. And the conservatives are going to say, no, it's going to be left to the state.
And he was never going to get the people who, oh, is that for me?
That's a net slappy G. How dare you call it?
He was never going to get the people who abortion is their number one issue.
Bingo, exactly.
It wasn't. Exactly. However, I think if you have, you know, the economy, immigration, abortion, and you are sitting there thinking, I'm voting for Harris, even though the economy and immigration are, you know, two of my top three issues. But Harris has won this big one, right? Number three. I think he did well enough to get those voters. And that one little pivot, and I don't think it's enough to see him polling. It's not a big enough block of voters to see him polling. But it, you know, it could mean, you know, 25 or 30,000 votes in Wisconsin, or, you know, 40 or 50,000 votes in Pennsylvania. And, you know, is 40 or 50,000 votes going to show up in polling? No, but it does show up on election day. And I thought that he handled that question so well. And, you know, the fact that Walz was, that was another one of his big lies, right? And so,
right.
So not only did Vance handle it well, Walz lied about his position. And
right.
And so I thought that was, I don't ever want to say that a Republican won the abortion question, but I think Vance came as close to winning it as anybody we've seen in a very long time.
Well, William hates it when I do this, Jamie, but I give these anecdotal, you know, comments from my daughters, because I have five daughters.
Oh, wow.
And this is their big fear with J.D. Vance. And they're like, you don't understand, Mom. You know, we see, he is like so dangerous on this. Like, you know, the stuff that he has said, you don't even realize. And they thought his softer approach, it worked for them. It worked for my daughter.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. So it did something. It made her. It took the pin out.
He didn't plant a religious Christian flag. He didn't call people wrong or going to hell or
right. All
of the things that people are used to hearing Republicans say about people who get abortions. He looked in the camera and said, "I love you." And I just felt like that was probably the strongest moment of the debate. Like it was just a super, because again, when people expect you to zig and you zag, it makes them kind of take notice and scratch their head a little bit.
Right. So abortion is a big issue for me, not because of me personally, because I work with some groups who I don't say fundamentalists in a bad way. That's just a term I use for the hardcore pro-lifers. You know, they're okay. They don't want limited government until it comes to abortion. They want the biggest government laws out there for that. And I keep telling them, before Roe versus Wade was overturned, 48% of the country was pro-choice. Only 46% was pro-life. I go, and then I'm like, that's one side that's hurting us politically in votes, regardless of your beliefs, the messaging of how they message. And then I just cringe when that 2012, I want to say, Missouri guy running for senator had his whole abortion and rape thing and just mangled it up. And it just became a talking point. So to see JD come out here, to me, in the bigger picture, this was a monumental moment in modern day Republican politics when it comes to abortion. However, I don't know if the party is smart enough to realize, hey, there's a potential template for us to start creating and crafting a message. So I don't know. But for tonight, I thought, and that's why they lingered on it. They kept trying to set Tim Walz for that knockout punch there, and he couldn't do it. All right. So they spent this time on abortion and, the gun rights. Vance talked common sense, this was pretty much party line. But what got me was how little time they spent on this one. Gee, your thoughts on the gun rights topic here. And the biggest hit was Vance going, he talked about mental health and how big cities need the power of police more. That was about it. And I thought Tim Walz hurt himself by saying mental health is not such a big issue. But anybody who looks at all these supposedly technically the mass shootings, some of them really aren't in terms of by number. But it seems to me, anecdotally looking at it, most of them tend to be from mentally ill individuals. So what was your take on the gun rights?
No, his one of the statements near the end, he said, sometimes it's just the guns and not the mental health. I'm like, what? I mean, you still need someone to pull the trigger. I mean, the gun isn't going around, right? It's like Rush Limbaugh always talk about, oh, when the SUV kills someone, they say it's an SUV. Otherwise, it's just a vehicle or a car, right? As if the SUV had a mind of its own or whatnot. So
Oh, yeah. Yes, you're right. You're right. You didn't even think it. You know what, G? It's so obvious. I'm so into the weeds. I'm like, and that, you're right. It's not like this. That's a great point. That's a great point. Because he said, yeah. Sometimes it's the gun. You're right. No, it's not.
No, you still need someone to pull the trigger, unless it was like a hot day and the bullet went off by itself, and then it's only one. So, I mean, you know, this again was a bunch of, you know, on both sides. I just kind of tuned out because we're not going to get anywhere with the Second Amendment in this country. Well, let me pull back on that. The Democrats may get their day when they pull, you know, when they really clamp down the Second Amendment, but I don't foresee that soon. But, you know, Vance made some, you know, great points about illegal guns coming across the border. So we need to make sure, like, how did that second Trump assassin get the AK-47? The guy's broke, came from Hawaii, lands and gets an AK-47 and lays in wait. Like, what the heck? How did that happen? He didn't just have that on the plane with him. I know we have another podcast on that. So.
I'm kidding. Okay, Jamie, your take on that in regards to a short topic.
I thought Walls made, you know, kind of one of those telling statements, you know, that really goes unnoticed. And he said something like, me and Kamala recognize the Second Amendment's there, right? Like he kind of brushed over it. He just said, like, we recognize the Second Amendment's there, kind of like dot, 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 we wish it wasn't, right? And so, you know, like, that's kind of the bubble over his head was, yeah, we wish it wasn't there. And that, to me, was kind of, it was just the tone in which he said it. Again, you know, Walls, I won't call this a lie, but, you know, he said his son was a witness to a mass shooting. And son, you know, his son was across the street and saw the ambulances show up, right? And so it wasn't a mass shooting where his son had to run from a shooter or he saw anyone get shot or get killed. He was across the street and, you know, basically saw, oh, you know, he's not the kid who called 911, you know, and they tried to clarify that, you know, that he's, you know, that he was in the vicinity of a mass shooting. Okay. I get that that could be scary and all those things, but it's just another example of Walls trying to stretch the truth. And I thought J.D. Vance, knowing that information, did a great job. I mean, he literally squared up, turned us from the camera and said, gosh, Tim, I didn't know that about your son, and I am so sorry. That's horrible that that happened. He didn't get involved with the facts. He's like, let the facts take care of themselves tomorrow, like G suggested. You know, those are going to – I don't need to fix those facts on stage tonight. What I need to show tonight is the empathy, and I didn't know that about your son, and that's just a horrible experience. I'm so sorry that he went through that, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but – I thought it was another moment where J.D. Vance just really, when you get in the nuances of this debate and you start talking about winners and losers, I just thought he hit a home run when it came to that.
Yeah. No, I agree. Senorita Annette, your thoughts on?
I just have one more point. Yeah, that maybe I thought maybe one of the guys would bring it up, but I thought that he did a really good job. I think they started that segment with a question about whether or not parents should be convicted when,
oh, right. Yes.
So I think if that segment started when their child, you know, has a shooting or if there's a recent case, I think that's out right now where the parents have been implicated, correct? I wondered how he was going to answer that. And I thought J.D. Vance did a great job answering that question because he laid out the nuances of every case. Did someone just go out and get a gun on their own and do this? Or did the parents go buy them a gun? Or why there might be different answers depending on the situation, how each situation had to be looked at individually. Because I thought he might try to have like an overarching answer for that. Like that should never happen or that should happen. And I'm like, and of course that would never work. I thought he did a really brilliant job just thinking on, because I was trying to think, what would I say? And as a parent, it's like scary me to think that, oh my gosh, I could be implicated for something that my child does. Am I responsible for that? I mean, there's a lot to unpack there.
Right. No, you're right. I think that's one of the easiest answers, but Democrats are turning that into an issue and they're trying to make laws, which is so terrible because each case is different. I was reading up, I'm a cold case guy, and it was his family. You know, poor kid was lost. You know, that's a cold case thing, but it was the parents were like trying to protect. It was a bad kid. I mean, it depends on the situation. There's some bad parents and they know their kid shouldn't have a gun. He gets the gun and then they teach him, hey. So I'm like, each case is different. But when you start making laws, I was talking to my friend in North Carolina, you know, and he's black. And so we talk politics. He lives a conservative life. Comes November, cha-ching, Democrat. You know, and he's in agreement with me. And he brought it up to me and said that there's a lot of guns in the ghettos. They start doing this down in Georgia with those country folk. Eventually, that law is going to wind its way up here. And what are these parents going to do? You know? And then I said, I'm not going to get into the Salem talk. We got into pulverized. But that's a good point. So you're right. That was a great answer by him. Okay. I thought on the housing. Let's move on to housing. I thought on housing, JD was brilliant, but it may have gone over people's heads when he brought up energy prices with housing. Because I try to explain to people, prices go up because of gas. How is that? How do you think you can get your foods? We don't teach. We indoctrinate at school to simple things like that you should be able to understand. Well, you got to move your goods. You know, so I thought JD did a pretty good job about energy and the truck drivers. I thought he answered the federal lands. That's a perception marketing issue. People don't know how much federal lands, but in their minds, when you say federal lands, they think of these vast lands of protected to put housing. Jamie, let's start with you here. What were your thoughts on the housing segment?
It's funny that you said that because the memory that it jogged. I've had one conversation in my life with Donald Trump. It was about 30 minutes long. Ooh. And one thing, and I kind of joke about, you know, I was like, you know, at that point he was running for president. It was 2015. It was about 2 weeks before he decided that he actually announced and came down the escalator. He was here in Sarasota, and I told him, I was like, you know, I'm just a blue collar economist. Like, I'm not an economist, but what I do know is when gas is cheap, food is cheap, and there have been, you know. Those are the two number of things that have driven wars throughout history, you know, energy and food. And so, you know, when there's famines, people fight. When people can't feed their kids, they fight. They steal, they fight, their crime goes up. And so if you can keep gas cheap and keep energy cheap, you're going to keep everything cheaper, right? And whether it's a pineapple in the store or a 2x4 at Home Depot. And I thought J.D. Vance did a good job of explaining kind of that correlation tonight.
Mr. G, what are your thoughts on the housing?
Yeah. There are a couple of thoughts I had here. One is Tim kept saying people are viewing homes as commodities, right? And I don't think that's the right answer. And he was trying to say that's a negative thing. They're assets to the people who own them, whether you're an investor or whether you're a homeowner. So he was trying to make that as a bad thing, but that's a good thing, provided that you own one. But two, absolutely, he was, you know, I think JD was fact-checked on migrants driving up home prices, almost as if like he was saying something that was racist. So going by the stats, we have a 4 million housing shortage, right, across the United States, 16 million new immigrants in the last 4 years. Let's say you divide each of them into families of four, right? And that's being generous because a lot of them came across as one each. So then they've taken up 4 million homes, which is the shortage that we have. So, you know, J.D. Vance actually just tweeted this out about 30 minutes ago from the Federal Reserve after he's fact-checked on it. By the Federal Reserve saying, finally, there's a risk that strong consumer demand for services, increased immigration, and continued labor market tightness could lead to persistently high core services inflation. Given the low current inventory of affordable housing, the inflow of new immigrants to some geographic could result in upward pressure on rents as additional housing supply might take time to materialize. So again, J.D. Vance is debating three different people here on stage. And, you know, I think that was at the end.
That was at the end of the housing where they said, what are you referring to? He goes, there's a study and we'll post it on the website. So he was able to answer it and deflect it. Like, I'm not going to get into this nonsense with you. There's a study. And then he made his point. Annette, what did you think on the housing issue?
I mean, I don't have anything to add to what the guy said, really.
All right, fair enough.
At that moment, I think I was a little tuned out for just a second.
You know, I just think it's common sense on the cost and how it works, supply, demand, free market. And I think it shows the moderator's ignorance and Wallace's own ignorance with some of his answering. Okay, let's combine the child care with the Leave Act that the I don't know if it's called the Leave Act. I'm sorry, the health care. I think Obama's old news. It's kind of embedded in our system. I think that was another way. Yes, Obamacare. I'm sorry. Obama too. Yeah. But Obamacare's old news is embedded in our system. I think they bring it up, brought up, you know, other old tropes. And I don't think it worked. I think he deflected it very well. Walsh tried his best to come back. I thought overall the health issue wasn't the big win that CBS was hoping they could deliver for Walsh. Let's start with you, Jamie, on this one. Hey, guys, I apologize. Let's kind of tighten it up because we got about 10 minutes left. So I apologize.
Yeah, I'm kind of like everybody else. I was sitting here taking notes. You know, I put the child care crisis. I thought he gave a good answer, but then it's kind of like, okay, I've got to get up and go to the bathroom or something, you know. So I may have missed a little bit, but that's really what I have in my notes is that I thought he gave a good answer on child care.
Yeah, I think it's infuriating because as a free market guy, understanding there's times the government has to get involved, I just think that's part of the competitive pricing for businesses. People don't understand. Healthcare was never a part of the businesses. It came about because of World War II and the shortage of workers. I'm like, you know what? If a company wants to offer paid leave for their kids, then that's an advantage. Go work for them but don't force companies. So I don't like where this discussion is headed. And I thought he did a decent answer. G, let's go to you on this, then we'll go to Annette.
Yeah, just real quick, I think, Ted Cruz and I believe Rubio back in 2015, they had a great plan of just removing the state lines and having, you know, enlarging the pool across the country. Like I'm part of Blue Cross Blue Shield in Massachusetts because where my wife's headquarters are. So why isn't it just Blue Cross Blue Shield of America, right? And then you have a bigger pool and let the free market take its course. So there wasn't really any real answer given here except for we'll look at it. I'm open to this or that. And, you know, it's not moving the needle for anyone.
You hit it on the head. I completely forgot about it. Because Obamacare is now embedded, that was the biggest way to solve this issue. Just, you know, each state limits, they have their preferred providers, just open, you know, remove the state line boundaries from it. Because the healthcare, after I left the military and I was getting my own insurance, that's what the healthcare person told me specifically. He goes, if they remove the state lines and we could operate not under these laws, those laws, etc., he goes, it would be cheaper for everybody. Annette, any thoughts on healthcare there?
No, I mean, they don't really get a chance to really dive into that. I did think he made a good point because he made sure that people understood that there wasn't some misconception that they wouldn't cover people with pre-existing conditions. And I think he even made a point that he talked about somebody in his family having some pre-existing conditions, if I remember that correctly. Because that is that's another thing. You know, people play upon each other's fears in these situations and people are scared that if they have had cancer, whatever it is, that they're not going to be able to get the proper health care. But I don't think that people really have a deep understanding of how Obamacare actually works. And I do. And I've seen how it plays out in covered California. So I don't know how it is playing out in other states. But it is very problematic now. And I was literally, I just want to say, I know this is sort of anecdotal too, but I was on the elevator with a bunch of people at the doctor's office today at the hospital. And they were all talking about, we are now living in a time where if you have an acute problem, it's still a great place to be, America, for their health care. Because, you know, if you're dying, but if you're trying to have any sort of, you know, ongoing care or get appointments or you're trying to be preventative in your care, forget it. it is just, we're in a sorry state for healthcare.
Right, right,
we did
right.
not really go into it. That's what I'm saying. It was very like, it was a weak topic in general.
Right, right. My healthcare went up from a $3,000 a year PPO to we're paying over $15,000 now for two people because we're both self-employed. So it's a mess. It's going to remain a mess because the Republicans lost this battle and they have no desire to revisit it. So I had to step into the Libertarian panel to hold the fort as we waited for our guests. So, and I was missing out on what looked like the most exciting part of the debate. It looked like they were going back and forth at it at the end. So, G, I'm going to let you take over because I completely missed. Sucks. I had to turn the volume out. I just saw them go back and forth, you know. What was happening there? And tell us about it.
About the state of democracy question?
Yeah.
I mean, it was basically the moderators asking whether, you know, J.D. Vance felt like Trump was admitting that he lost in 2020 trying to subvert, you know, the peaceful transfer of power. And J.D., he really didn't want to answer the question, right? And I'll be honest about that. He just kept saying, well, I'm going to look to the future. And Tim came back with, well, his silence is – his non-answer is an answer or something to that effect. So then at some point J.D. did talk about the real threat to democracy is from Kamala and Tim because of the threat of censorship, right? Yeah. And Kamala said it, Hillary said it, John Kerry recently has said it. The First Amendment is in the way, right? And what Jamie was saying earlier, I didn't catch that. Second Amendment, yeah, it's there, right? So, and then J.D. was talking about Hillary 2016, about the election being stolen. I think they went on around about that a little bit. And he said, Hillary in 2016 said, Russia, Russia, Russia. And then Tim Walz said, well, January 6th was a whole different level than Facebook ads. So they just went right back and forth on that whole issue.
He did say on January 20th, though, Trump, Biden took office and it was a peaceful transfer of power. He did say that too. And go ahead,
Jamie.
So people forget in 2016 that Hillary Clinton put a full court press on electors prior to their vote in December to change their vote and to try to have thousands upon people. They did things like publish people's home addresses and had people knocking on their doors. I know at least two or three electors from Florida who are here from Sarasota County who had strangers on their doorstep every single day that their kids would come home. They had to let their kids not ride the bus because they're like, I don't know if strangers are going to be at my house. And it's so there was a full court press by Hillary Clinton and her crowd in 2016. It was a sad state of affairs. Democrats have very selective memory and revisionist history on it. I do think that J.D. Vance did as well as he could. And I also think that if I call it, it's a little political theory of mine. I call it asked and answered, right? Kind of like in a courtroom. If there's nobody out there voting in the 2024 election who has not heard of January 6th.
Right.
There's not one. Not one person. And so if you've heard of January 6th and you were going to vote against Donald Trump because of it, you're already in that camp and tonight didn't change it. And so where I do think that if on the abortion question, if it's not number one on your list, number three on your list, J.D. Vance did well enough on that one that he could have moved the needle a little bit. And so I thought that J.D. Vance did as well as anybody could with the question. It was a setup to begin with. It was going to be set up regardless of whoever was on stage, Democrat, if the Democrat nominee or Republican nominee changed. I see that question playing out very similar as it did tonight, and I thought J.D. Vance did as well as anyone.
Yeah, like I said, I had to go into the other podcast or live stream to prep for it. But my first take, because I did hear the very early part there, that, as you guys were talking, I remembered. And that was my take. It's like, I hope he brings up how they were trying to change, had their own slate of electors or whatever the term is. And they were talking how delegates didn't have to go in. They had the right to change their minds and not vote for Trump. So it sounds like he did. And you're right, that was a setup. So real quick, in 10 seconds each, we'll start with you, Annette. Did this debate move the needle at all in terms of making any headway for either party?
It moved it for me. I'm going to vote for Trump now. No, I'm just kidding.
And your daughter's up.
Yeah, right. My daughter in New York, she's like, okay, Mom, I'm still listening. So I would just, can I just quickly say, I thought JD was very, very strong at the end again, because he did something that Trump didn't do that I wanted Trump to do. He said, she's been in office already for a really long time. And this was her, right? And he made a point after point after point. Kamala's, you know, what did he call it? Like, not her presidency, but this is her administration. Kamala's administration. All of these situations are like this right now today. And these problems are with an administration that's been like, I don't know, 1,000 days, whatever it's been. No, it was a super strong point. Tim Walz's last segment was, I thought, weak. You know, it was sort of like, please vote for me or please vote for Kamala. Like,
I'm not having a joke. Like, that's Tim Walz.
Yeah. It sort of like made me feel bad. And JD was like, and gave a really strong answer. So do I think so? So your question was, do I think that it changed anything? I think if it changed anything, it changed it in JD Vance, in our direction, for the performance that he did tonight. I don't think that anyone moved over to the Walz side tonight, for sure.
Mr. G.
Yeah, I think it moved the minute hand over to Trump by 1 minute, right? This is a marginal thing for the people like Annette's daughters. and Tim Walz's, I mean, he made this crazy statement that I've got to paraphrasing, a socialist, a neocon, and a failed, or not a failed singer, but a dumb singer, right? We've built a coalition of Bernie Sanders, Dick Cheney, and Taylor Swift. I'm like, that's your argument? Your closing argument?
Oh my God.
And Taylor Swift is actually the negative on polling in terms of how much you can move the needle. Now, right. Jamie, before you answer to the audience and to you two guys, if you didn't see it, Jamie had a great point in his article on Substack. I had forgotten all about it. You know, I knew Jack Kennedy, and you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy, in reference to Dan Quayle and how he saw himself. And that was one of the most brutal lines in terms of just annihilation that anybody could say to another person in that moment. You had to be there. And I saw that, Jamie. I'm 57. I remember that debate. And Jamie brought up the point, didn't move the needle, yet it was one of the most brutal, one of the most talked about. I think it was a little different because Bush was riding the coattails of Reagan still. But I think it shows a point. My only caveat, and I said 10 seconds, I want you to take a little bit of time here, is I think we're in a different era. I don't think it pertains to this debate, but I think we are now in an era of social media, of videos, of everything, that if maybe not this go round, in the future, these VP debates may be able to move the needle. And to throw it back on you, you were talking about won't show up in the polls, but he may move that needle 20,000 here, 30,000 here. So, brother, give me your take. Did this move the needle or not?
Yeah, I wrote that I don't think vice presidential debates move the needle much. Now, in that example of 1988, certainly, George Herbert Walker Bush won a landslide victory, and it doesn't appear that either one of these candidates are headed towards a landslide victory. So Dan Quayle's or Lloyd Benson's actual slapping around, you can put the Batman up there, slapping around Dan Quayle, maybe didn't make a difference. But I do think that J.D. Vance showed a side of himself. And, you know, it's funny because I flipped it over to CNN for maybe 5 minutes because I already wrote a blog about it. So I wanted to kind of get my thoughts together. And I do that by writing, right? So I wrote my blog and already sent it out. And I felt like, J.D. Vance probably, he did move the needle by zigging when everybody expected him to zag. And So in that regard, I think he could have moved the needle a little bit. I think that, you know, Walz did not help their ticket at all. They didn't add a single voter tonight. I think that J.D. Vance kind of showed a human side of both himself and the Republican Party that I think was sorely needed. And in that regard, I think there are people who, because of the economy, because of immigration, because of foreign affairs, because of, you know, go down the list of things that this administration have screwed up and that were better under Trump. All of these things were better under Trump. And so I think there were people who were not voting for Trump because they don't like him. And, you know, at some point we have to realize, you know, I always say, you know, the ass beats the idiot every time. And, you know, Donald Trump is our ass and, you know, Kamala Harris is their idiot. And so I have to hope that my political theory holds strong with that. Because, you know, I found my 30 minutes with Donald Trump, I found him a very likable person. But I certainly see the persona that people see of him, and they don't like him. So, the question is, can you not like the man and still vote for him to lead the country? And I think people saw, I think J.D. Vance was able to at least move that needle a little bit. Maybe it was only the minute hand, but he was able to move it in their direction a little bit. To say, you know what, you don't have to like us for us to be able to lead the country. And, you know, and we will do a good job. And I'll tell you, for the first time ever, I saw somebody at the very end of the debate, you know, oh, God bless you, God bless America. And he looked in the camera and he said, I'm rooting for you. And he said, I'm rooting for you. That's how he ended the debate. And I thought, you know what a heck of a way to end the debate. And it came across as sincere and just like, hey, you know what, I'm with you. And I think that was kind of the tenure, the theme of the entire debate for J.D. Vance was, I think he connected with the American people like no one really expected him to.
I think that if he's moved the needle, it's going to be with, and I'm speculating here with some logic, it's going to be from those who may not care for Trump and are looking at the VP, kind of like what Pence was to some of the Christian conservatives in terms of why partially they're part of the reason they selected him. That, okay, I don't like Trump, but this JD guy isn't what they said. And his answers tonight, he humanized himself more than any candidate. And to Tim Walz's credit, he did not come across the buffoon in terms of his personality. But I think JD, in listening to Mike Termat, listening to you guys, I think J.D. Vance humanized himself a bit more. And with that,
Vance is somebody who is strong enough and capable enough to stand up to Trump.
Oh, yes, I get that. But see, that's the analyst in you. I'm talking about how people in the average Joe out there, they don't look at it like we do. Ron Nearing, Ted Cruz, after Ted Cruz fired somebody, he took the job. He made we were at that course. He sat there and said this, you see that little fingernail? That's us. The ones who know what's happening that are in the weeds. The rest of the country does not know. And that's what I mean by humanizing. You're right. I think for some people that, but overall for the average Joe that may say, let me go hear what this is about. And that's happening more and more because of social media. More people are tuning in. I think they left saying, what the media has said about J.D. Vance. I don't know. That's not the guy I saw. And so let me do this. At the end of the day, I am the one deserving of getting the slap because I wanted him to come out and pummel Walz. Oops, hit the wrong one. The pummel Walz, and he did it. And he may have come across better. You can always – this old dog can always learn new tricks. And with that, folks, before we go, Miss Annette and Mr. G, we all know where to find you. Guys, at Annette underscore Ross 5, G Mangani at RSFG. Jamie, tell the audience a little bit about yourself and where they can find you before we say goodnight.
Yeah, I'm on all social media, TikTok, the Twitter, everything's at Rep Jam except for Substack. I'm at Reasonable Arguments. reasonablearguments.com. And if you, I've written a book, if you're interested, it's American Speeches That Changed History, and it's on Amazon. So,
oh, man, interested I in
that,
you.
It's,
I love that.
I picked up, I kind of do a little intro to 20 great American speeches that I liked. So,
I'll ask our producer to put all that in the notes, with the book. Just, make sure you email me the name of the book. And, thank you for coming on. You made it very
my pleasure. Thank you so much. And this is a lot of fun to do this immediately after the debate. So it was really,
you're on the East Coast.
A lot of fun.
I'm sure your wife is already zonked out.
Yeah, there. It's 2 in the morning over there.
So that everybody else, thank you for tuning in. Do not forget to like, share, and most importantly, subscribe. You can find this podcast as well as our others at grumbiesmedia.com and on our social media platforms, Rumble, YouTube, Pandora, Spotify, and Apple under profile handle Grumblings Media. This is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up. And until next time, I bid you adieu.